There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Live sport, the latest headlines, and top debate. This is The Grill, live from Barasti with Tom Urquhart on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Second of our 3 hours here live on Dubai Eye 103.8. It is The Grill. We're broadcasting live from the rooftop garden down here at Barasti. It's a belter of a day. Great atmosphere, brilliant crowd in here as well. They've come down, I'd like to say, to watch France against Italy, but I think it might have something to do with the Irish national rugby team taking to the big screen and the field down in Cardiff in just a little while. That's right. It's the final weekend of the Six Nations. The noises you can hear behind us are the celebrations, ongoing celebrations of St. Patrick's Day, and to that end we are asking you for your suggestions of great Irish sporting icons. I've got Mark Archer and Chris McCarty alongside me. We'll get round the grounds in a few moments' time. We've had an hour to think about it. A few texts have come through, Chris.
An awful lot of texts. Colin O'Malley, and with that name I can only assume that Colin is an Irishman, a proud Irishman at that. He has been spending his hard-earned fills messaging in on 4001. He said Liam Brady, of course, the former Arsenal midfielder. Kevin Moran, formerly of Manchester United. Jim Beglin, formerly of Liverpool as well. He's also said, and a man we forgot, and again, you tend to forget this. Well, you don't actually tend to forget him. He's very much a recent, but Conor McGregor in the world of MMA, he's put forward.
Patrick Harrington is a text that I got.
Patrick Harrington,
Jason McAteer?
Yeah, you could. He's Scouse, but he played for Republic of Ireland. If we're going down that route,
same for me, that tongue in cheek.
John Aldridge, Tony Cascarino as well. There was a few Englishmen that represented Ireland over
Phil
the
Babb.
Years. Phil Babb is, yes, Phil Babb. Steve Staunton, he was an Irishman though, at least. There was a few that made
it. We could
that.
Go the other way and talk Declan Rice now, but that's probably not the.
No. Yeah, young under 21 Irish player of the year, despite the fact he's just been called up by the England national team. But yeah, a lot coming in on 4001. Keep your suggestions coming. Conor McGregor's a good one. We will put together both Republic and Northern Ireland. We'll put together a top 10 of greatest sportsmen and women.
And we haven't even got to their national sports, the hurling and the Gaelic football. We're probably not the ones to really advise or give some great names there. So if any of the listeners have got great suggestions, your greatest ever Irish sportsman, where they be from hurling or Gaelic football, we're happy to consider them. We'll do a quick Google search and we'll give them a plug.
Sean Kelly, the road cyclist, somebody's texted in on that one, if you want to get your thoughts through on that. And somebody's also texted through Joey Dunlop. Now, I...
Motorbike racing? Yeah, I think he was a 500cc driver. I stand to be corrected on that, though.
Sonia O'Sullivan, there's a call.
Sonia, yes. Yes, that's a good one.
We haven't thought athletics yet, have we?
That's our first female. Yeah, that's a good one.
If you've got any other suggestions, then we are asking you, please, to text us now on 4001 for your suggestions. Right, let's get around the ground, shall we? A couple of games of football on. Chris McCarty's keeping an eye, one eye on each screen on these ones.
I certainly am, Tom. Let's start with the Emirates FA Cup. It is quarter-final weekend. It's half-time, so it is, at Vicarage Road. This one kicking off at 4:15 local time here in the United Arab Emirates. I can tell you it is Watford 1, Crystal Palace 0. It is Etienne Capoue, the former Toulouse, former Tottenham man, with that opening goal after 27 minutes. Watford looking to avenge that 2-1 defeat that they suffered to the Eagles back in the semi-finals of 2016 at Wembley. Of course, Palace would go on to reach that Emirates FA Cup final, and we were there, Mark Archer. Manchester United eventually coming through Louis van Gaal's final game in charge.
So Jesse Lingard, great finish.
It was a great finish from Jesse Lingard, so it was. Watford 1 then, Crystal Palace 0, that one half-time in your early kickoff in the Emirates FA Cup. As for the early kickoff in the English Championship, it is second versus third. It is a Yorkshire derby. It is Leeds United taking on Sheffield United. I can tell you, 39 minutes on the clock. Sheffield United just starting to grow into this game somewhat. Leeds United, for me though, they still look as if they carry a bigger threat going forward, but it remains goalless. Leeds United 0, Sheffield United 0. And given that Sheffield United are the away side. I think if you offered Chris Wilder and his men a point now, they'd bite your hand off for it. 39 minutes on the clock. It's Leeds 0, Sheffield United 0.
Roger Federer and Rafa Nadal will meet in Indian Wells. First time since 2017. They're both through to the semi-finals. Both great to see the two ambassadors of the sport of men's tennis going so well over in the States at the moment. We're heading over to the Players' Championship to get an update on the players' leaderboard for that in just a little while. But let's go to the rugby first. Mark Archer's going to tell us more about what's happening in the Six Nations.
Early kickoff is in Rome, where Italy are taking on France, and France hold the lead with 5 minutes to go until half-time. 35 minutes gone on the clock. It's France 10, Italy 6. For Italy, the home team, two penalties to Tommaso Allen. They have had some good chances, though. They've been a little bit unlucky, and they've opted to kick for the corner when they could have taken some easy points, and they're going for the corner again here, trying to score a try before half-time. For France, the scrum half, Antoine Dupont with the only try after 16 minutes. That was converted by Romain Intermac, who's also kicked a penalty. So 5 minutes to go until half-time. Italy hot on attack, but it's France that lead in Rome, currently 10 points to 6. 6:45 is the next kickoff for the Wales taking on Ireland, and 9 p.m. is the Calcutta Cup, England at home to Scotland.
Huesca against Alaves is the early kickoff over in La Liga. Still one apiece in this one. Goals from Avia and Caleri, both from the penalty spot in that first half. So one apiece over in Spain. What's happening in the cricket? Let's just paint a picture on that one.
Yeah, it's the fifth ODI over in beautiful Newlands in Cape Town. Sri Lanka taking on South Africa. South Africa lead the series 4-0. A little bit of a dead rubber, but plenty to prove for players wanting to find some form before the Cricket World Cup. Sri Lanka are batting first, 126. 6-4 after 30 of their 50 overs. Leading the way is Mendes, 52 not out for Sri Lanka. He's been joined at the crease by Pereira, who has yet to get off the mark. So Sri Lanka batting first, 126-4 after 30 of their 50 overs.
There we are, talking about all things Irish and sport. And let's just take a moment to shove a little bit of more praise on Willie Mullins yesterday. He picked up a trophy that he's not picked up before. And this is quite bizarre. This is National Hunt Racing, for those that don't know. We've just seen the culmination of the Blue Ribbon event for Jumps Racing, which is the Cheltenham Festival, 4 days of competition, specifically between British and Irish horses, but with raiders from France and further afield as well. Irish have dominated in recent years, thanks much to Willie Mullins. He's won champion hurdles, he's won Grand Nationals, he's won pretty much anything there is. He is the most successful trainer at Cheltenham of all time, but had never won a Gold Cup until yesterday, and then picked it up with Album Photo.
Yeah, indeed he did. Album Photo, the 12-1 shot, did bring it home for Willie Mullins, and it was, it gave jockey Paul Townsend a golden moment as well of redemption, because, well, that he's had his woes in this particular race as well. So fantastic for the owners, fantastic for the jockey as well. And what was it? He's been a 6-time runner-up. Yeah. In the Gold Cup. Yeah. So seventh time, magnificent seventh and all of that. A wonderful success. And 12-1, I'm sure there would have been one or two cheering extra loud.
See, and you know how we've been talking about Irish sporting icons, and we've sort of touched on a few of the jockeys, but you think of some of the breeders, some of the trainers that have come through from Ireland down the years. JP McManus, the owner, who's had such an impact on it. Aidan O'Brien from a training point of view. But in the terms of, you know, just sporting icons, more recently the Giggenstown stud, but also the Ballydoyle stud from years gone by, just so dominant in the world of racing.
Coolmore as well.
Coolmore. Coolmore.
Coolmore's Godolphin's big rival, isn't it? And yeah, horse racing over in that part of the world, it is a bit of a religion, isn't it? I haven't myself been over to check out all of the facilities over there, but there would have been an awful lot of Irish happy yesterday. And what it's done is it's kick-started what I expect, in actual fact, to be a pretty barnstorming weekend for Irish rugby. I know Mark Archer, and we'll get to Wales Ireland a little later. I suspect that Ireland will produce a performance tonight against Wales as well. I really do. I think Joe Schmidt, he is the master tactician. I am, of course, talking rugby union. I am, of course, talking about the Six Nations. Given how disappointing I felt Ireland were in their opener against England, this is a chance to just reassert themselves heading into that World Cup. This is a chance to put in a big performance to say, hey, you were talking us up 6 weeks ago as being the real challenger to the All Blacks. Don't forget us. We've gone to Principality and we've won. So given the fact that Willie had that victory at Cheltenham, Ireland in Wales later today as well.
It's Paddy's weekend.
It's Paddy's weekend. You know where I'm going with all of this. The Irish will be singing.
Open the window, open the door, I should say, or the gates for England, isn't it?
Well, it does indeed, because again, just running through those permutations, if Wales win and defeat Ireland this afternoon, they complete the Grand Slam, they win the Six Nations title, it's done and dusted. If Irish get a victory in Cardiff, it opens up the title race to different options. It probably means that England are going to win it, because England have a superior bonus points and they have a superior a more advantageous points for and against record. So England could come through if Irish win. However, Chris, if Scotland can upset the apple cart and win for the first time, the first time in Twickenham since, I think, 1983.
Oh,
I don't think you were even born then in 1983. In your lifetime, they haven't won down in Twickenham. Should Scotland win and retain the Calcutta Cup, of course, they did it at home last year, then Ireland would come forth through the pack there and win there. So three big options that could happen. The obvious one that I think might happen is I quite fancy Ireland this afternoon, but it will be a tight match. There's nothing between these two teams. Wales at home are on a terrific run under Warren Gatland. I think they have now trying to win their 14th consecutive victory. They haven't been beaten since for almost 12 months. So they're in fine form. But Joe Smith, you just feel he's got something up his sleeve here. It's both of their final two Kiwi coaches, obviously a lot of emotion around what happened yesterday in New Zealand.
Yeah.
Both will want to go out with a final Six Nations victory, of course. They're both finishing up after the World Cup. That's Warren Gatland and Joe Smith. There's going to be some tricks up the sleeves. Ireland wanted the roof open. They wanted it shut. And then Warren Gatland said, no, we've got some weather coming, we're going to open it up, which is, of course, their call. Both teams have to agree on that. So it's been a bit of and even Eddie Jones has been commenting on the match during the week, saying that he reckons Wales are tired. He reckons that they've run out of steam. Typically, and then Warren Gatland's gone back to Eddie Jones and said, you should just worry about the Scotland match. You've got nothing to do with our match, mate. So plenty going on behind the scenes here. It will be a fascinating afternoon of Six Nations rugby.
6:45 kick-off in that one. We'll have plenty of build-up ahead of it. In just a few moments' time, we talk Champions League.
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
We've got perfect views down here today for the St. Patrick's Day celebrations taking place here at Barasti. It is The Grill with you on all things sport, and plenty of sport to get through, including our poll today running through the Irish icons of sport, be they individuals or, of course, teams, be they sports themselves. If you'd like to share your thoughts with us, then please do exactly that. A lot of people having their say, and we're encouraging you to do exactly that. We've been talking horse racing, be it sticks, be it flat. Vincent O'Brien. Yeah. You know what? What's he done for the sport of horse racing? One of the greats, of course, of the game. You got a few other suggestions?
Indeed, the texts are pouring in on this one on 4001. Do keep them coming. Ronan, again, I can only assume with a name like Ronan that you are Irish. DJ Carey, he says, a Kilkenny hurler. So we'll put him into the mix for top 10 sportsmen or women coming out of Ireland, both Republic and Northern. Mark's been in touch. He obviously missed our chat a little earlier, but he's put forward three titans of rugby union. Brian O'Driscoll, Keith Wood and Paul O'Connell. Love this one as well. Father Ted. Not quite sure Father Ted was a sportsman, but we'll run with it anyway. And Roy Keane from Mark as well. And we did speak a little earlier about Roy Keane, no doubt what he did in terms of bringing, I mean, he played for Manchester United, he played for the most successful side in the 90s, no doubt about that, he was skipper of that. So when it comes to a footballer, you'd be hard pressed to find a bit. George Best, obviously, from a Northern Irish perspective.
Norman Whiteside,
oh yeah, but Keane, I'm not
sure. Yeah, I know what you mean. Do keep your thoughts coming on that. I want to stay with the world of football if I can, because Chris McCarty and I were trading text yesterday because we were getting very excited about a horse race taking place down in Cheltenham, the Cheltenham Gold Cup, but also a couple of hours before that, the draw for the Champions League. Kudos to FIFA. They did this one well. They had all the pomp, all the circumstance, a couple of ambassadors along to help with it as well. An intriguing draw, and for those that don't know how it panned out, Chris McCarty.
Yes, indeed. Eight teams left in the UEFA, of course there is, it's quarterfinals. Eight teams, four English sides, the first time that England have had four Premier League representatives since the 2008-09 season. The first team out of the hat yesterday over in Neon, the headquarters for UEFA over in Switzerland, was Ajax Amsterdam. Ham. They've been drawn against Cristiano Ronaldo and Juventus. Two real, I guess, totem poles of European football are Ajax and Juventus. Then came Liverpool. They have been drawn against FC Porto. No disrespect whatsoever to the Portuguese side, but Liverpool have been handed a bit of a dolly. It is worth reminding ourselves that 12 months ago they did beat Porto over two legs by 5-0. Then comes the all-English affair between Tottenham Hotspur and Manchester City. Given the fact that these two teams play in the Premier League as well, it will be three meetings in just the 10 days, so that one might get a little bit boring. And then finally, it is Manchester United taking on FC Barcelona. You've got to go back to 2015 for the last time that Barcelona have been European kings. Manchester United, Barcelona, rich history, of course. Manchester United beating Barcelona en route to their success back in 2008. Paul Scholes scoring that winning goal at Old Trafford in a 1-0 success. Of course, Barcelona, though, have had the hoodoo over Manchester United since then. 2009, they beat them in Rome by 2-0 in the final. Fast forward to 2011, they beat them 3-1, another masterclass under Pep Guardiola. So that one whetting the appetite there, licking the lips, that one undoubtedly will be an absorbing tie. So there you have it then. Ajax, Juve, Liverpool, Porto, Tottenham, Man City, United against Barca.
So I use Chris as my sort of sounding board on all things Manchester United. I have a son who, you know, I've tried to make him a West Ham fan. He's not having any of it. He's grown up as a Man
U hunter
fan.
Like me.
He's a man. And I texted Chris just one word after the draw came out, and that was an ouch. to which sort of came back. But then I had a little think about it, and I always think that when you get to this stage of this sort of tournament, the prestige and the quality that's left in that tournament at the moment, and all of those teams are deserving of their place in the final eight. You've got to beat the best teams at this stage in order to raise the trophy. So would you rather do it? Would you rather meet the likes of Barcelona in a quarter-final or a final?
Well, I think I text back to you, and then you could draw Porto. And again, I've got to be careful. Listen, Porto are there on merit. They've done magnificently well. They beat AS Roma in the last 16 to reach this point. But Liverpool over two legs will beat Porto. There's nothing that would suggest they will not do that. And it will be pretty comfortable as well, Tom. If you're asking me, would I rather play Barcelona now or Porto, I'd bite your hand off Porto. Because then what you're hoping is another team might do you a favour and beat a Barcelona. You let them do the heavy lifting and then you come through. I mean, who's to say that Ajax might not get the better of Juventus? Again, I would rather play Ajax over two legs in a semi-final than I would, say, a Manchester City or, dare I say, a Liverpool. So from United's perspective, Barcelona go into it for me as favourites. Undoubtedly, they've got the best player on the planet in Lionel Messi.
But they're there for the taking.
But you're absolutely right. The Ole Gunnar Solskjaer effect, Manchester United will do their due diligence, they'll study Barcelona, they'll keep it tight, and what we have seen under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, there's a real threat to Manchester United on the break. The question mark will be, are they disciplined enough? Do they have enough quality to sit off Barca, sit in deep, and pick them off on the counter-attack? That's my only question mark. Is Ashley Young good enough to keep Suarez, Dembele and Messi quiet over 180 minutes? Is Luke Shaw good enough at left-back? You're expecting Messi to come drifting out to that side. Is Chris Smalling and Victor Lindelof, is that pairing good enough to keep Barca quiet over 180 minutes? If it is, with Rashford, with Martial, with Jesse Lingard, with the pace and abundance that Manchester United have got, The game plan is pretty simple to me. I think at Old Trafford they'll concede possession. At the Camp Nou they most certainly will concede possession. And then when you get on the ball in those transitions, can you make it count? That is the question mark. It's an intriguing tie. I make Barcelona favourites. Part of me thinks, though, that United maybe, just maybe, if the stars align, could pick them off and come through this one.
Archie, Manchester United fan.
Well, I guess before this, with the PSG match, no one gave them much of a chance under what was the Mourinho regime, and they pulled one out of the bag, really. I don't think even going into that second leg with a 2-0 deficit, no one thought they were going to get a result out of that. It was done and dusted. However the good feeling in the club is and however well they were playing and getting results, no one thought they were going to come away with a victory there.
And let's be honest, Arch. Listen, I know football's a results-driven business, but even the most hardened of Manchester United fan, over the 180 minutes of that last 16 game against PSG, it was men against boys at times. PSG did a number on them at Old Trafford. They were the better team, and again, and I am a United fan, believe it or not, But over there in Paris, they peppered Manchester United. Their final ball was lacking. So you've got to be a realist. Yes, okay, Manchester United came through, and it is a results-driven business. And a lot of you might now be thinking, Chris, you're talking utter nonsense. But over the 180 minutes, PSG were the better team. Barcelona will dominate possession. They'll have an intensity and a tempo that will pose Manchester United problems. They'll have to have a little bit of luck. They'll have to be concentrated and focused more than at any point this season. But again, with the players that they've got going forward, Pogba's, Rashford's, Martial's, if they can keep it solid and keep it tight, they've got players who can hurt Barcelona from a counter-attacking perspective.
And again, I know that Barcelona have been dominant over in La Liga. I know they've been the class team in this tournament. But we have seen... We've seen some frailties in Barcelona. They can be picked apart, as they have been, with a couple of shock victories in La Liga throughout the season as well. So they haven't been as dominant as they had in previous years.
And that's what Solskjaer and his coaching team, whether it be Mike Phelan, whether it be Kieran McKenna, Michael Carrick, Mark Dempsey, all of those individuals, and as Marcel Boot, who I know is in charge of scouting opposition, etc., they will study Barca. They will know if you get at that back four. I would imagine Sergio Roberto will come in at right back, Jordi Alba at left back, and it'll be Gerard Piqué and Clément Longley, the Frenchman. That will be the back four. If you get at that, Sergio Roberto, Anthony Martial, face him up and go at him. Be direct. Marcus Rashford, Gerard Piqué, not the quickest. Clément Longley. If they can get those kind of players, Paul Pogba as well, dare I say it, it's a bit of a Jose Mourinho one, this, but set pieces could prove vital as well. If United can do that, crucially though, Tom, they've got to keep Luis Suarez, they've got to keep Moussa Dembele, they've got to keep, Osman Dembele, they've got to keep Philip Coutinho, and they've got to keep the big man himself. I say the big man, the small man, big little man, Lionel Messi, the greatest player that I believe has ever played the game. They've got to keep them quiet over 180 minutes. Do they do that? I don't think they do. So you've got to hope your life that they're able to pose a real attacking threat and get some goals. I expect goals in this tie. I do just believe, though, that Barca, over the two legs, will just have enough.
Just one more quick one. I know we're going to go to a break in a minute. I just want to sort of rewind a little bit. I know this is a bit of an old story now, but again, I wonder whether there is a bit of a gulf developing in club football, specifically in Europe and specifically in this tournament. I can't see why we're getting to round of 16 before we get to the quarters. But when you get to round of 16 and teams, if you take them as the top 16 teams left in Europe, teams are getting beaten by 7-0. Yeah. That strikes me as a little bit of a warning flag being risen there, where a little bit of a gulf is opening up between certain divisions and certain countries.
I mean, Schalke, you're in response to Schalke losing 7-0 at Manchester City in the second leg.
I get it in the opening round or something like that, but last 16, really?
I mean, you've got to give Schalke credit for getting to the last 16. So they've came through a group stage. It isn't like they've been lucky and they've just landed there. But what you have to do is you have to give unbelievable credit to Manchester City. They had their foot on the throat of Schalke, and Pep and City, they didn't stop. Schalke have had a miserable season domestically, and okay, they'll look back perhaps and say, listen, getting to the last 16 is relative success, but Domenico Tedesco, young manager, great first season, he's been found out a little, second season syndrome under the young manager of Schalke, just found out a little bit. And Manchester City, they have done that to a lot of teams, yeah. Tom, I take you back a couple of weeks ago, what was the score at the Etihad against Chelsea? They banged in 6 against Chelsea. So on their day, City, and that's the ominous thing, on their day, Bernardo Silva, Kevin De Bruyne, Raheem Sterling, Leroy Sané, Sergio Aguero, I mean, on their day, they are the best coach team in Europe, in my opinion, Manchester City. On their day, when they fancy it, it takes something else to stop them.
Get your thoughts into us, 4001, you're listening to The Grill. We're broadcasting live from the Barasti Rooftop Garden, down here at Barasti. Cracking crowd in. I love it. Yeah. I love it when it's like this. And I know that the sun's come out again. It's not as miserable as it has been in recent weeks with the winds and some of the rains and things like that. But the crowds are flocking in, be it off the beach, down here for the sport, and of course the St. Patrick's Day celebrations. And that's why it's an open invite to you as well. Do come on down and enjoy an evening of sport and entertainment live from Barasti.
The Grill has all the sport you need right now on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Let's get back to the sport. Not like we've gone away from it, really. We've just been doing it for the last 2.5 hours, or maybe even longer. Doesn't matter. Let's get back to it. Let's get some scores on the door, shall we? Mark Archer, second half, Italy against France. Wapan.
Yeah, action underway.
Wapan, Mark.
Action underway. 3 minutes gone in the second half. Italy have drawn first blood in the second half with a third penalty to Tommaso Allan. That means that the scoreline is Italy 9, France 10. Only try the match so far for the scrum half, Antoine Dupont, after 16 minutes. Romain Intermac kicked the conversion and also added a penalty. So France 10, Italy 9. Close match here, Tom. We'll see what happens in the second half. I'll try and bring you some score from Super Rugby as well over in Johannesburg once I get a score update.
Okie dokie. Let's go to the football then, shall we? Because we've got football to bring you up to date with. Second half of the Yorkshire Derby. Is that back underway, Chris?
It certainly is, yeah. 48 minutes on the clock at Elland Road. It remains second place in the Championship, Leeds United 0 versus third place in the Championship, Sheffield United 0. Leeds United better marginally in that first half. Sheffield United, though, under Chris Wilder, they are dogged, they are determined, they are disciplined, they're organised, they're all the things that you'd expect from a Sheffield United side under Chris Wilder, of course, a firm fans favourite, a man that represented the club as a player who's come in and has done a wonderful job at the Blades at Sheffield United. Leeds, better of the two teams in terms of the pretty possession. Marcelo Bielsa, he absolutely demands that, doesn't he? The ingenuity that they show in the final third. There's been little glimpses of that today, but Sheffield United have been resolute. It is 49 minutes on the clock now. Nip and tuck in this one. Nothing between the two sides. It is Leeds United 0, Sheffield United 0.
Right, what's going on in Super Rugby?
Yeah, Super Rugby action coming from Emirates Park in Johannesburg. It's the Lions hosting the Melbourne Rebels, and the Rebels have got jumped out to a very big lead early in this match. 26 minutes gone, and they have put 26 points on the board. It's 4-1 for the team from Melbourne. Rhys Hodge, Quade Cooper, Bill Meeks and Issa Nisirani have scored the tries. Quade Cooper has added three conversions. Malcolm Marks, the lone try for the Lions. So it's the Melbourne Rebels 26, the Lions 5.
So you know what that means? Well, it means there's been a goal.
There certainly has, and we head now to Vicarage Road. It is the Emirates FA Cup quarter-final match between Watford and Crystal Palace. Watford led at half-time by a goal to nil. Etienne Capoue, it was the Frenchman on the score sheet. Well, whatever Roy Hodgson has said at half-time has clearly done its trick, because it is now Watford 1, Crystal Palace 1, and it is the Belgian on loan from Chelsea, Michu Batshuayi, who has scored the goal to level things up. 62 minutes on the clock. Watford 1, Crystal Palace 1. I did tell you a little earlier that these two teams met in the 2016 semi-finals. On that occasion, Crystal Palace came out on top by winning by 2-1. Well, they are back in it here. Watford 1, Crystal Palace 1, 65 minutes on the clock, and it's the Belgian Michu Batshuayi.
Don't know which way to look. It's all happening at the moment. Oasis have walked in. They've just reformed down here. It's just happened. The moment, you know, it's breaking news down here on the lower deck. We're up here on the top deck. Mark Archer's nudging me in one rib, telling me to keep an eye on the rugby because we've got developments over in Italy. Tell me more.
Alain Le Bleu has just scored their second try of this match after 6 minutes of the second half. It's the big winner. Hujer has gone over just big bustling run up the left-hand touch side. He went through a couple of weak Italian tackles, and he's gone over for the second try for France. They've just been converted by Romain Intermac. So with into 6 minutes, 7 minutes now of the second half, it's a comfortable lead for the French team over Italy. They lead 17-9.
You're listening to The Grill. We're just talking about the Champions League draw, which took place yesterday for the quarterfinals for 2019. Some intriguing games to look forward to, some intriguing ties to look forward to. Oh, both over two legs, is that right, Chris?
Both over two legs, absolutely. So Ajax at home in the first leg against Juventus, Liverpool at Anfield against FC Porto, Spurs at Wembley, or could it be their new stadium? We'll wait and see with that one. They're taking on Man City. And United originally drawn to face Barcelona in the first leg at the Camp Nou, but because City and United policing UEFA weren't going to allow those two teams to play in the same week, so Manchester United are a little bit of a disadvantage now. City will be away at Wembley, which means that United must play their first game against Barcelona at Old Trafford before they travel over to Spain for the second leg.
Let's get some insight from those in the know. It's always interesting. I love watching these things. I love watching who the clubs send over as their ambassadors for the event. Did you see that yesterday?
I did see Robbie Fowler, our good friend on the show. He was over there. And I did
Andrew
message
Cole,
him.
He was
Andrew
there.
Cole was there. Mark Overmars, technical director for Ajax. Pavel Nedved was there for Juventus. So some real big names of yesteryear over representing their clubs. But let's now get
not the worst gig, is it? So Robbie, would you mind just getting on a plane, heading over to Switzerland for? Yeah, it's a couple of days. Yeah, no problem at all. We'll put you up. What do I have to do? Just sit there, mate,
and just look pensive, and then look rather less pensive when we get a good draw.
Do you know the funniest thing I saw, though, I think on social media, and I probably retweeted you, was Thierry Henry
No.
Opening the balls, and I think this was a total fake job, but Terry Henry opened the balls up and it went, not Arsenal.
That was fake. Yeah. That was fake.
It
was
Julio. I had to giggle to myself.
Yeah, absolutely. Arsenal not there. Of course, Arsenal in the quarterfinals of the Europa League. But Pep Guardiola, the big one, and we probably haven't given it enough time to discuss, is Tottenham Man City, Tom. It's an all-English affair. Yeah. Tottenham, what a job Mauricio Pochettino has done. Yes, okay, in recent weeks, they've fallen back into the pack with regards to the Premier League title race. They're now facing a real fight on their hands to finish top four. But he's got Spurs to the last eight. They go up against the all-conquering Manchester City, a side an awful lot of people expect to go all the way this year, no doubt about that. Let's get the thoughts of Pep Guardiola, because Pep believes there's nothing to separate the two teams.
The draw is what it is, so any team has his strength points, the weakness points, the same with us. We are strong in some areas and weak in some areas, other ones, so let's try to discover that, and it's what it is. Tottenham, And think about, I would have preferred the other team, and the other team maybe put it out after two games. So it's what it is. Never in my life I think too much would be better in this kind of situation. What I want is come back for the international break, the people fit, ready to play the last month and a half, everybody making his own contribution, because if tomorrow we are able to get semifinals, Naples is incredible, the fixtures that we have, a lot of games, and everybody would be necessary, you know, to play, and that is all I am concerned about. This Tottenham, huge respect, of course, because I know them quite well. A different system can use, play five in the back and Diamond and 4-2-3-1. How good they are in front with the Song, with Kane, with Dele Alli, with the quality from Eriksen. How good they run in behind the set pieces with Eriksen. He's an incredible taker, experience in all departments. So it's a offside. But if you talk about any other team of the Champions League, would be the same. So in that level, it's so tough, so demanding. And like, you cannot control about the draw. What do you think about the draw? So the draw decide that, and we're going to face them.
Talks a lot of sense, does Pep Guardiola there, and his appraisal of Tottenham is absolutely spot on. He talked about the strengths, Kane, Heung-min Son, yes, Dele Alli, and the dead ball quality that Christian Eriksen brings as well. Some speculation, incidentally, that he could well be on his way to Real Madrid come the summer, but that's for the future. That's Pep talking about the big one, Spurs against Manchester City. What of Liverpool? Beaten finalists last year, they're going up against a Porto side that 12 months ago they were far too good for. They beat them 5-0 over the two legs, and after his side's victory over Bayern Munich at the Allianz Arena, what a performance that was from Liverpool. They've huffed and puffed in recent weeks a little bit, but what that does for confidence, what that does for momentum, Liverpool very much there from a continental perspective, and they're very much there from a domestic perspective too. Jurgen Klopp afterwards saying that at Liverpool, well, they've proven that they are where they belong.
Massive, and a big step for us, a big one for us. We will see what we can do with it, actually, but it's still a fantastic sign. I love it that we again set a mark for LFC, for this wonderful club, that we really are back on the landscape of international top football, and we all think that's where this club belongs to, and tonight we proved it at least a little bit. But now it's in a moment you hear it, obviously. I'm really happy about the result and the fact that we are through. It's not that I expected it. I knew we have a chance, but I didn't expect that it will really work out. But the boys made it happen, and that's brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
That is Jurgen Klopp speaking in the aftermath of his side's 3-1 win over in Bavaria, over in Germany, at the Allianz Arena to book their place in the last eight. We've talked at length, Tom, about Manchester United going up against Barcelona. I think Barca will start as favourites, but one thing that we can guarantee with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, he looks on the positive of absolutely everything. And as he's pointing out here, United are exactly where they want to be at this stage of the season.
To win trophies, you've got to win at least one or two really, really tough games. That's their like defining moments. But we beat Liverpool, we beat Chelsea, we beat Arsenal back then. And you think you deserve a little bit of luck in the draw next time. But Wolves away, what a difficult game that can be. So comparisons, well, we're not challenging to win the league this year, but we're challenging to for the other two trophies.
Yeah, they certainly are. Barcelona in the Champions League, UEFA Champions League quarterfinals, that is. And as you heard there, he mentioned Wolves. Good reason for that, because that is Manchester United's. They are Manchester United's opposition later this evening. Emirates FA Cup quarterfinal evening. They take on Wolves at Molineux, 5 to midnight, not before Swansea City welcome Manchester City to the Liberty Stadium.
I have a question for you. Obviously, they made the draw for the Champions League yesterday, and we've just gone through that. But they've also made the draw for the semi-finals.
Yeah, they have.
But why? Why haven't they done that now instead of going into the Riyadh again? So we know that the winner of Manchester United Barcelona will take on the winner of Liverpool
Porto.
And Porto. So it could be like Liverpool's as a their feeder club, but to Barcelona, we see their best players going to Barcelona on a regular basis. That match could be, that could come true in that semi-final round.
Well, it could be Liverpool-Barca, which would be a mouth-watering tie. Suarez, Coutinho going up against their former club. It could also be Arch, Liverpool-Man U. You imagine that for a semi-final. The two most hated, you know, rivals, bitter rivals, the most successful clubs in English football history. And then the mouth-watering thought on the other side. And again, I don't want to be disrespectful to these teams. We're speculating somewhat, but say Cristiano Ronaldo gets past Ajax and Juventus, they then could be taking on Pep Guardiola's Manchester City. Juve City, what a tie that could be. And then if we look even further, there's, and again, permutations galore, we could have a Ronaldo-Messi final, Juve-Barca, which would be epic. We've never seen those two players go up against one another in a Champions League final. Flip that, we could see a Liverpool-Manchester City. We could see a Manchester United-Manchester City final. So there's a lot of intrigue, a lot of excitement surrounding the Champions League. I cannot wait.
And we talked about earlier that comeback win by United, but what about the comeback by Juve during the week with Ronaldo with the hat-trick?
Yeah, I mean,
hilarious, wasn't he?
Atletico Madrid looked absolutely spent, and I know there are stories coming out of Spain that they've had a falling out with the fitness coach over there, that there was a set two in the changing room after this one. They're 2-0 up with Atletico Madrid. Diego Simeone, he's got them dogged, but Juventus, with that man, cometh the hour, cometh the man. It's the old cliche, isn't it? But Cristiano Ronaldo, he just loves the UEFA Champions League. He scores two, he gets the penalty, not in doubt, puts it down. He's up against a fine goalkeeper in Jan Oblak, sends him the wrong way. Juve win 3-0, Juve march on, and Ronaldo is in the hunt for what would be a sixth European Cup and a third different team winning them.
Spare a thought also, maybe not that tournament, but the Europa League as well. Arsenal, what a comeback. You know, I had them dead and dusted against Rennes, and then that man, Patrick Aubameyang, steps up and just inspires another comeback victory.
3-0, they were 3-1 down from that first leg. I always felt, keep 11 men on the park at the Emirates, I always thought Arsenal would have a little bit too much for Rennes. Did I think it would be 3-0? Perhaps, maybe not. But they were the better team. They were down to 10 men for the second half of the first leg. They are through. They have now got an absolute doozy of a quarter final up against Napoli. All and right. I know Napoli, they rode their luck a little bit. They were beaten 3-1 by Salzburg in their second leg, but by virtue of a 3-1, a 3-0 victory in the first leg, they went through 4-3. So Napoli by no means home and hose, but that will be a real test for Unai Emery. Napoli managed by Carlo Ancelotti. Yeah. That is the tie. And with Chelsea and Arsenal being kept apart, we've got the possibility of an Arsenal-Chelsea Europa League final. We've also got the possibility of a Napoli-Chelsea final, which would see Ancelotti against his former team, Maurizio Sarri against his former team. So, as I say, from a European perspective, it couldn't be any better. Even the boys.
You've got to love a sporting permutation several. 4001, if you want to have your say when we come back. Leaderboards, Players' Championship, fifth major underway. Tell you more.
This is The Grill, live from Barasti. Enjoy your weekend with a 99 dirham main and a hot lunch combo.
Some things never change in sport, do they? Lewis Hamilton on pole for the Aussie Grand Prix tomorrow. Roger Federer, Rafa Nadal facing each other for the first time since 2017. Semi-finals, the Indian Wells. It's extraordinary, isn't it? These boys, they're the Peter Pan of tennis, aren't they?
It's insane is what it is, Tom. Novak Djokovic has bitten the dust. Rafa Nadal, Roger Federer still there. Federer turns 38 in August.
And what is Rafa, 32, 33?
32.
It's extraordinary. Anyway, they're both in action tomorrow. And we'll turn our attention to all things golf because Players' Championship underway. It's all about Fleetwood Mac, isn't it?
Yeah.
The band.
The great band. And it's Tommy Fleetwood and Rory McIlroy leading, tied for first after...
See what you've done there.
Yeah, you got that one?
I've just finally got it. You said it at the top of the show. I was like, Fleetwood Mac? Makes sense now.
Yeah.
I actually nicked it from Sky Sports earlier.
Yeah, of course, it's the Players' Championship, the unofficial fifth major of the year. It's taking place at Sawgrass, as it always does annually. Ponte Vedra Beach in Florida.
And last question about it, before you do that.
Yes.
You know how we always say the unofficial fifth? Yeah. Will it ever be made an official fifth or not?
Dustin Johnson this week's been talking up. But again, Robbie, we spoke about this briefly in off-script extra time. Robbie made the point. If they're going to make any fifth major, and I've got my doubts, they do not have it in America. They take it to Asia. Surely, Arch, you're a money man. You're a sponsor.
Yeah, the event that is probably earmarked is probably the WGC event in Shanghai, which has a very strong field. It's well-sponsored. HSBC are involved. And that's probably the one big event in Asia that maybe could become a major if they want to add to five. But yeah, you're right. There's three majors of the year in the US, and of course the Open Championship in the UK. And that's where it's done and dusted. And you know, there's no talk about adding a fifth major. So people talk about this fifth unofficial major. It's a big golf event with a massive prize money. The top players in the world are playing. It's at the home of the PGA Tour. They're based there at Sawgrass. So, you know, it makes lots of sense. But the best players are trying to find their A games. Of course, we're only 3 or 4 weeks away from the first Grand Slam of the year, the Masters, of course, at Augusta. And as tends to happen this time of year, the big players start to find their games. And two players that have done that are Tommy Fleetwood and Rory McIlroy, who are tied for first. Good to see Rory McIlroy finding some early season form. He wants to add a green jacket to his Mr. Majors. Hasn't won a Grand Slam event since 2014. He's long overdue. Will he fulfill the prophecy that's been long talked about him becoming and winning, you know, maybe getting to 8 to 10 majors? Well, he's been stuck on four now for a long time. But they're both at 12 under par. It was Rory McIlroy that shot a second round 65 that really got him, jumped him up the leaderboard. They are 12 under par, Fleetwood and McIlroy. They're three shots ahead of the evergreen Jim Furyk, 9 under par. Also, Ian Poulter's going well at 9 under par. Brian Harman and Abraham Anser. Notable others down the leaderboard, Jason Day, 8 under par. Dustin Johnson, John Ram, 7 under. Bryson DeChambeau and Sergio Garcia both at 5 under par. Justin Rose at 4 under par. Tiger Woods at 3 under par. Francesco Molinari at 2 under par. And Brooks Koepka 1 under par. So Tommy Fleetwood, who's been incredibly consistent over the last few years as well, is top of the leaderboard. This would be a major event for him to win, yet to break through and win a major. But this would be a big tick on his CV if he can come up with victory. This is what he had to say after his second round of 67.
I got off to a fast start today. It was a bit tougher. The greens got, you know, crustier and crispier at the end, and the course is just firming out a little bit now. So it was a different test than, say, teeing off first thing yesterday morning when the course was pretty receptive. And but, you know, all in all, very happy.
We were talking yesterday about being in the States and playing in more of these big events and playing more tour events. About 17, 18 you played last year after 10 the year before. Does that familiarity and comfort with the style of golf and the golf courses contribute to the good play we've seen from you in some of these larger events?
For sure. For us, growing up in Europe and playing in Europe, it is a different style of golf over here. It takes some getting used to. Definitely stretches your game. And I've enjoyed it out here since coming. I've said that, you know, quite a few times now. I've always enjoyed it out here, and I enjoy going to work when I am out here. So, again, like, happy that my game's improving, happy that I'm getting up there more and more and just enjoying the atmospheres that we get at these tournaments.
And one last one. Could be the 36-hole lead here. Had that at the U.S. Open and a World Golf Championship. So you are very familiar with being around the late starts in these big events. What have you learned through those experiences that can help you this weekend?
It's tough. Late in the afternoon on Saturday, you get into the very, very final part of how the golf course is playing, and it gets tough. So I've not yet to win, but hopefully that's coming.
That's Tommy Fleetwood, the Englishman, 12 under par. He is tied for the lead with Rory McIlroy after two rounds of the Players' Championship, rounds of 65 and 67. Now, many notable players also missed the cut in this event. Players that have missed the cut: Henrik Stenson, Jordan Spieth, Phil Mickelson, Charles Schwartzel, Paul Casey, and Dubai-based Rafa Cabrera-Ballo. Now, what do we ask about Tiger Woods? He's back at 3 under par, trying to find some form. He's won four majors at the Masters. He'd love to add another green jacket to his closet, to his wardrobe. This is what Tiger Woods had to say after his second round score.
Yeah, I was pretty ticked, and I let that fuel me. When I got up this morning, I was still a little red from it, and so I tried to make sure that I used that energy correctly and came out there with a sense of purpose and sense of aggression, and I was able to do that. And I was 3 under through my first 7 holes. I was right where I needed to be, and then I made two mistakes there at 17, ended up costing me, you know, 4 shots. So, and then I really got ticked. So then it was I just felt that, hey, I'm gonna get these all back. Yeah. I'm gonna play hard. I'm gonna play with aggression, with my anger that I had. I'm gonna let it fuel me, and I'm gonna get it all back. And I got 2 of them back. Wasn't quite able to get them all back, but I'm still right there with a chance. I'm only 6 back with the forecast the way it's supposed to be, and supposed to blow out of the south again tomorrow, and then Sunday it's supposed to get ugly. So anyone who makes the cut today has a chance to win this golf tournament. It is so stacked and so packed. All you need is a couple good rounds and you can go ahead and steal this tournament.
You listen to Dubai Open 3.8, and we come back with news of a rather significant goal.
We certainly do, Tom, and it's not in the Emirates FA Cup. We head to Elland Road, that big, big clash at the top of the English Championship. Leeds United in second, taking on third place Sheffield United. We're watching a replay of it now. What I can tell you, it's Leeds United 0, Sheffield United 1, and it's a horror show from Leeds United defensively. Chris Basham it is who comes forward, normally sitting midfielder. It's a horrible mistake. I think it's Liam Cooper it is. Liam Cooper, the big number 6 for Leeds, he makes a rick of it. He's last man. Billy Sharp pounces on the mistake. He just rolls it into the path of Chris Basham. He opens his body up, he passes it into the far corner. He puts Casilla, the Leeds goalkeeper, on his backside. Sheffield United have got the lead. Chris Wilder and his coaching staff, the Sheffield United boss, celebrates muted celebrations on the touchline. But what a huge goal this could prove to be. 71 minutes on the clock at Elland Road. It's Leeds 0, Sheffield United 1.
Some pretty glum faces down there from our Leeds fans. Our friend Lloyd's got his head literally in his hands, trying to cover his mouth, which has been left aghast. Alan for Expat Sport as well. He's got his, the hands have gone in the pocket. It's the old hunched shoulder, and you know, not happy with that.
Not happy at all, because what it does mean, if this result stays the same, what it means is Leeds United's, well, their fate are out of their hands, because Sheffield United will leapfrog Leeds United into second place in the Championship. They'll be a point ahead of Leeds, 74 versus 73. Norwich remain top of the Championship. They've got a game in hand. They're in action a little later today. They go to struggling Rotherham United, that one kicking off in an hour's time. So Norwich, a chance, if this stays the way it is, Norwich this evening with a victory at Rotherham will go 4 points clear at the top of the Championship. It is a big 17 minutes or so coming up for Marcelo Bielsa's Leeds United. And I've got another goal to tell you about. My goodness, it's all going on.
Flying in.
Right then, this time we go to Vicarage Road. It is the Emirates FA Cup. It's the opening quarter-final of the day. It's Watford taking on Crystal Palace. And it's the home side, Watford, the Hornets, who have taken the lead. It's substitute Andre Gray on the score sheet. He came on, he's only been on the pitch 2 minutes. He came on for Will Hughes. Gerard Deulofeu was moved back. Andre Gray partnered the big man Troy Deeney up front. And it's worked to an absolute masterstroke from Javi Gracia, the Watford manager. Andre Gray, the arch goal scorer, the poacher extraordinaire. Right place, right time. He has put Watford ahead. We're into the closing stages of that one. Watford 2, Crystal Palace 1. And I did say that Watford were looking for a modicum of revenge from that 2-1 defeat to Crystal Palace 3 years ago in the semi-finals. They are 5 minutes away from booking themselves a place in the last 4.
And breathe, everybody, because it is all happening. We promise you live sport and action, and it just gets better as well.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.